Welcome to the ProWrestling.net NXT Recap. I'm your host, Zach Zimmerman, and today we're going through the show that aired on October the 19th, 2016, taped last week, October the 13th at Full Sail University. This was kind of another one of those shows continuing the trend of Dusty Classic first-round matches, where this string of shows just kind of leave something to be desired in terms of like an in-ring quality standpoint goes. That said, I did think this show had a little bit more to offer than say the shows at the last set of tapings might have, considering we got the full-on debut of one highly anticipated wrestler in Roderick Strong. We got the in-ring debut of another in Nikki Cross. We have Shinsuke Nakamura back from quote-unquote injury in this program, with Nakamura and Joe is kind of back on the front burner after being moved to the back for a little while. So I think all of those things kind of go towards boosting up the buzz of the show just a little bit for each one. But again, this wasn't a show that was standout as far as like in-ring quality goes, or really for any reason other than the newsworthiness of the debuts. Before I do jump into this show, though, this is the second week that you lucky freeloaders are getting the NXT recap on the All Access side of things. So let me talk a little bit about ProWrestling.net membership. If you head over to ProWrestling.net, you'll see at the link at the top of the page, the membership info is all you need. I'm not sure if it's at the top of the page on the mobile site. I think it might be part of the drop-down menu on the side. But either way, you are computer navigable people in 2016. I'm sure you can find the link. There you'll find all the information you need. It's $7.50 for 1 month. I'm not sure if that JR's podcast deal is still going on, but maybe it's worth seeking that out and giving it a try, if so. Anyway, with that membership, you will receive, first and foremost, ad-free access to the website, so all those pop-ups and flashers are gone. Site becomes instantly easier to navigate. Not that it's ever difficult to navigate, but you don't ever have to worry about closing out of any ads or any banner ads on the sides or anything like that. So just as far as convenience goes, that's really kind of a nice little touch. But where you're getting the bang for your buck in ProWrestling.net membership is where it comes to our audio content. Every week, we're delivering pretty massive amounts of audio content to you guys. On the free side of things, you get a pretty solid little sample. I think every day we try to drop something for you guys on the free side. But members are generally getting one or two extra things every day on the audio side. We're getting reviews of every major television show, NXT, Raw, SmackDown, Impact Wrestling, Lucha Underground, all the pay-per-views. We've even got the British guys, Darren and Hayden, are now doing Progress audio reviews. They just put up an audio review of Progress Chapter 35, if I'm not mistaken. So if, the UK indie scene is getting really hot, we're covering that for you now. We have Will and Jake get together for the Pretentious Wrestling podcast whenever they get the chance to do that. You have Jason Powell's Q&A audio show just about every week, which is always a very entertaining listen. And then, of course, you have the flagship broadcast of .NET Weekly. Jason Powell and sometimes a superstar guest. When I say superstar, I don't mean a signed contracted WWE superstar. But I mean somebody who's made some waves in the wrestling world. Last week we had Dirty Dutch Mantel on with Jason. We've had Jim Ross, had Chris DeJoseph. You name it, position power players in the history of wrestling, they've probably been on .NET Weekly. And then, of course, sometimes it's just one of us guys in the site. But we bring our own pretty decent level of insight and our own specialties, too. So it's always a good listen, always packed with news and hot takes. And it's just that's really where you get your most money's worth, is that .NET Weekly audio show. But you put it all together and it becomes a great deal. ProWrestling.net membership, guys, it's where it's at. Check it out. With that out of the way, let's head into this week's show. We got a video package, kind of bringing the Samoa Joe and Shinsuke Nakamura feud back to the forefront. It showed Joe attacking and taking Nakamura out of action a month or so ago, and showed Joe's, demand for a match with Nakamura in that, in the weeks that he was out or be handed the NXT title. And when he did not receive what he wanted, he was attacking various wrestlers throughout the weeks. Of course, culminating in last week's pull-apart brawl between Nakamura and Joe, which ended with Nakamura laying out Joe with Kinshasa in the middle of the ring. We got the opening video, and inside the arena, we had the commentators hyping that we would be hearing from the NXT champion Shinsuke Nakamura later on in the show. But before that, we got the first match of the show, which was hyped to be a Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic first-round match. The participants were out with Rich Swann joined by partner No Way Jose, the two dancing all around the ring. Their opponents, Drew Gulak and Tony Nese, were out together next. They got a brief little inset promo so that they don't need fancy dance moves when they have the toughness and the physical ability that they bring to the table. First match of the show was a first-round Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic match, and the crowd was very much into the babyfaces chanting, "Can you handle this? No way. Jose." It was pretty much the babyfaces kind of rolling early, some crowd-pleasing offense. Jose planted knees with a big flapjack, big vertical suplex. He tagged in Swan, did a, you know, popped Swan up into a splash on Nice for a, I think it was a quick early two count. You had the babyfaces, like I noted, were rolling until right before the first commercial break when Tony Nice dropped Swan throat first across the middle rope. And then action went to ringside where he did that cartwheel he does in the ring apron, off the ring apron into a super kick on the ground. Went to that commercial break that I mentioned, and the heels took control. As we came back, it was Swan working his way out of a rear chin lock as he collided with Gulak on a double clothesline, and it was a double down. Hot tag to both partners, and Jose came in hotter than anybody else as he ran wild. Turned Nice inside out with a clothesline, got a two count off of that. Drew Gulak tagged in, but Jose popped him up into a straight right-hand punch, kind of a good-looking spot. And then Swan wiped Nice out with diving tumbleweed off the middle turnbuckle to ringside. As in the middle of the ring, Jose slammed Gulak with a Cobra Clutch slam and got the pinfall in about 6 minutes, give or take. After the commercial, I forgot to restart my timer. I stopped my timer during commercial breaks because I never know how much time they actually work into the, or they work in or out of the match there. And so, you know, I never really trust that. So about 6 minutes of in-ring time, give or take. And our Swan and Jose, most newsworthy of all, are advancing to the second round of the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. They celebrated by, of course, dancing. Replays aired and the bracket was updated to reveal that these babyfaces, these poor, poor babyfaces, will be advancing to face the Authors of Pain in the next round. In the ring, Jose took a microphone. They just cut a quick little promo. Jose said that it looked like their opponents couldn't handle them. You know, because Swan says, "Can you handle this?" And Swan followed up and he said, "There's no way they're going to go out of the tournament this early." Joe then Jose addressed the Authors of Pain. He said that they had better not be looking past him and Swan. And then they closed their little segment by leading their respective chants, and they danced their way out of the ring to end. Fun little bit there. I mean, it wasn't a great match, wasn't memorable, but Jose and Swan are a fine little babyface team for the Authors to run through. That said, when I noted off the top that these opening round Dusty Classic matches are not delivering in terms of in-ring quality at a level that I would kind of hope for, I would say that this was pretty much right on par with that. I would have liked a little bit more time, the match quality to be a little bit better as a whole. And another thing about that match quality thing is, like, I don't know that the Authors of Pain necessarily are one of those pieces that make it so that these later round Dusty Rhodes Classic matches will be, you know, improved as far as quality goes, because I don't really know that the Authors can have a good match at this point. Anyway, Tom Phillips and Corey Graves checked in on commentary at this point. They acknowledged that Hideo Itami had been injured. He was no longer able to compete in the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic, where he was scheduled to be Kota Ibushi's tag team partner. But they noted that an update would be coming later on the matter. And then transitioned to a recap of Sanity beating Ty Dillinger and Bobby Roode to advance in the Dusty Classic last week when Bobby Roode walked out on Ty Dillinger. They then went to the trainer's room where the roving cameraman caught up with Ty Dillinger and asked for his thoughts on Sanity. Dillinger said they dished out a hell of a beating, but his issue's not with Sanity, it's with Bobby Roode. He said that Roode broke his word, and he made that word under the, you know, kind of in the honor of Dusty Rhodes, considering it was the Dusty Rhodes Classic, and he broke that word. And now Dillinger wants to take it out on Roode at TakeOver in Toronto. Dillinger then stopped the trainer from tending to him. He said, "I'm fine," and he walked away. So kind of a hard babyface turn from Dillinger, who was always kind of like a little bit heelish, but the crowd loved him because of that whole 10 gimmick. They can chant 10 along with him. But this was like the first real, like, serious, okay, the crowd can finally get behind this guy as, like, somebody you want to see fighting for you and fighting for his own pride. Like, this was just a good first hard heel turn for Ty Dillinger. And when I say good, I mean it wasn't like standout or anything like that, but it was the logical progression of this storyline, and it's what's necessary to put the pieces in place to make it the best that it can be. The match was then officially announced and made official for TakeOver Toronto as Bobby Roode will face Ty Dillinger. Bobby Roode was then shown warming up backstage, and he was hyped to be in action next. And again, I like the logical progression of this feud. It makes sense. It's a reasonable feud to do. That said, I'm a little bit concerned that the entrances of this match are going to outshine the quality of the match itself. But I guess we'll see in time. We went backstage while Austin Aries was eating a banana pretty obnoxiously into the camera when the interviewer asked him if he could shed any light on his mystery partner tonight. Aries said no, but I can shed some light on the power of potassium if you have any interest in that. Aries then turned his attention to Hideo Itami and mocked Itami for questioning his own toughness, he being Aries' toughness, and then pulling out of the tournament with a sore neck. He said that Itami had undergone an MRI, which had actually revealed that he had no spine. Thought that was a pretty funny line, actually. Aries then said that the one thing he will say about his tag team partner is that it's the one athlete who deserves to be Aries' partner. And together, they'll win the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. Only the strong survive, he closed. So he did end up giving a little bit away as far as who his partner was. Came back into the arena, Bobby Roode made his glorious entrance on the revolving pedestal, and he now has an even sparklier robe with a built-in sparkling cape. The crowd sang along with his music all the way, and he was actually introduced for the first time as the glorious Bobby Roode. His opponent, Sean Maluda, was already waiting in the ring. This one did not last long at all. Maluda got a little bit of offense early, caught Roode with a dropkick, got a quick two count with a roll-up, but Roode put him down right away with a back suplex and went to work from there. Maluda looked like he was going to try to make a comeback and pick up some momentum, but as he hit the ropes to pick up said momentum, Roode picked him up and planted him with a hard spine buster. Roode then yelled, "It's glorious!" And he spiked Maluda with a lifting impaler DDT for the win, just shy of 3 minutes. Replays aired, Roode took a microphone, and he said that in 5 weeks, he will take over Toronto. He said that Ty Dillinger's been complaining every day on social media, just embarrassing himself. He said Roode only wanted to team with Dillinger because Dillinger had begged him, and Roode took pity on him and figured, maybe I can drag Dillinger out of mediocrity and drag him up to my level. But Roode said he realized that when you're at his level, you eliminate the losers and the Klingons. That's when Ty Dillinger hit the ring and the two began to brawl. With Dillinger getting the better of Roode, the crowd would yell 10 each time Dillinger would land a shot. Ty cleared Bobby from the ring. Crowds continued to chant for Dillinger, so it seems that they are fully behind him. Two stared down between the ring and the top of the ramp, and the commentators hyped their takeover match. So, again, logical progression. I'm not super stoked on this match. I mean, it's good. I'm looking forward to the entrances. I'll maintain that. And hopefully the match can be better than I expect it to be. Not that I expect it to be a bad match. I expect it to be a fundamentally sound match. Just in terms of, like, work rate and not being boring. This match kind of has the potential to be boring, maybe, but hopefully with the character work and stuff like that, there'll be enough bells and whistles and stuff like that I expect it'll be entertaining if nothing else. We went backstage where Liv Morgan was asked to address the recent issues between she and Billy Kay and Peyton Royce. When a replay showed Royce assisting Billy Kay in the win over Liv Morgan last week, Liv said that she doesn't need to run her mouth like Billy and Peyton does. She said she makes moves, not noise. But just then, she was attacked from behind by Peyton Royce, and Billy Kay joined in the fight as well. The two beat the heck out of Liv, dragged her out in front of the crowd to the top of the stage. Billy took a microphone and said that Liv was just about to complain about getting beat up, but she got beat up again. Peyton said that everyone needs to take notice, including Asuka, that they are taking over the women's division. They declared together that the women's division belongs to us. This is kind of the first standout thing that Peyton and Billy have done so far. And this wasn't standout in the way that it was, like, super memorable or great, but it was some nice character stuff. If they're going to be the new Mean Girls, the new bullies of NXT, this is what I want to see them doing. It was very apparent in the promo that Billy's delivery is significantly better than Peyton's. Billy's delivery was smooth and confident and delivered with a tone that just said that she knew what she was trying to convey. Peyton was, like, trying to be super aggressive heel. She was gritting her teeth and talking like this. And it was just very clear that she's trying to play the role more than Billy is at this point. But again, you put these two in a role like this and you give them some feature time, I expect they'll both make some pretty significant improvements in the weeks and months to come. At least I expect it. If they don't, you know, then there's room for me to criticize them, and it's them not living up to their potential. But at least at this point, I think the potential for growth is there, and this was the first thing they've done that's gotten me saying, like, yeah, okay, this is what I want to see them doing, this is how I'd like to see them featured. Tucker Knight and Otis, well, in my spoilers and stuff, I had his name down as Bogojevic, which I think is his real name, but in this, they simplified it to Dozovic. But Tucker Knight and Otis Dozovic versus Team Aries Aries' partner at this point was still a mystery in the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. First round match was hyped up next. We went to commercial. When we came back, we got the duo of Tucker Knight and Otis Dozovic making their entrance to a bad Linkin Park ripoff song. Whoever it is, I think it's like a duo called the CFOs who are in charge of WWE's music. For a while there, they were putting out some really fun stuff, like Finn Balor's music, great. Shinsuke Nakamura's music, great. Sami Zayn's music, great. Samoa Joe's music, great. Like, there's a lot of music right now that's great. But then in some of the most recent waves of incoming talent to NXT, they've gotten so lazy, and they've gone the complete bad WCW route of just doing, like, as close to a song as you can do without being sued for, like, copyright infringement or whatever you would sue for. With Sanity and their My Name is Mud ripoff, the Primus song, I mean, it's uncanny and almost embarrassing that the UFOs would be that unoriginal. And with this, the Linkin Park song, it was like, what was it supposed to be? I don't remember if it was supposed to be like, what was that? In the End, Nothing Really Matters, or like, what was the other one? They did One Step Closer to the Edge. It was one of those songs, and it was just like an exact ripoff. I mean, I don't know if these bands can send a cease and desist after WWE's music producers, but like, it's bad. It's really bad. And it's like, the songs, whatever. Their songs are fine. They're whatever your tastes are as far as like the bands performing the songs. But the spinoffs are bad. And they're like, they're not even trying to hide the fact that they're ripoffs. I've gone on for too long about this, but I don't know, man. This needs to get back to the CFOs that it's embarrassing. Get original. Do your own shit. Come on. Anyway, this duo made their entrance, and they're a couple of hosses. Actually, I was talking to a couple of friends, and these two are the Natural Disasters 2016. Tugboat, or Typhoon, and Earthquake. As far as, like, a fun, agile, for their size tag team, who do some fun fat guy tag team moves and stuff like that, these two are fun. They're featured in a backstage vignette where they said that they're the strongest tag team in the tournament. So they're going to run through Team Aries and whoever he picks as a partner because they're hungry and they need to eat. Because that's the gimmick for every fat guy, that they're hungry and they need to eat. Remember when Bull Dempsey was fat and he was eating a lot? Well, I guess maybe I could point to Ryback too with the whole Feed Me More thing. He wasn't a fat guy, but I don't know. Whatever. Team Aries was out next, first with Austin Aries. And once he made his way to the ring with a big smile on his face, his partner was out next, and it was revealed to be the much-anticipated debut of Roderick Strong. The Tombed In chants at Full Sail popped big, they chanted Roddy, and the fans, the bandwagon fans at Full Sail, who will be chanting Roddy really loudly at the next set of tapings, who will go home and look him up on Wikipedia when they get home, they sat on their hands. Third match of the show, though, was a Dusty Tag Team Classic first-round match, pitting Austin Aries and Roderick Strong against the team of Tucker Knight and Otis Dozovic. This one was actually fun. Maybe the most fun first-round match that we've seen in this tournament so far. Aries kind of comedically tried to go toe-to-toe with Otis at the onset. Very quickly, was overpowered. Otis lifted Aries like he was going to body slam him, but he just held him, like, perpendicular across his body, tagged in Knight, who hit the ropes at high speed and then came back sandwiching Aries in between them. Kind of a fun spot. Like I said, they've got some fun fat guy tag team spots. Roddy finally tagged in around the minute mark, and he immediately began to trade hard chops with Tucker Knight. Goddamn, Roddy chops hard. The much larger Knight caught Roddy running the ropes out of nowhere with a great-looking dropkick. Man, my typos are so abundant tonight in my NXT coverage. I apologize for that. I was going through reading this, and like, as I get through each one, it's like weighs on me more and more. I was getting through them, and I thought I could do it, but at this point, it's like, oh, it's bad. It was not a, what did I put this down as? A drop kick out. It was not a drop kick out. It was a drop kick out of nowhere. Then Tucker Knight and Dozovic dropped simultaneous headbutts on Austin Aries when he tried to run in. Then they doubled Roddy over, you know, kicked him in the gut, and then they hit opposite ropes and bounced back, and they did like a running belly bump in the middle of the ring, catching Roddy's head in between them. And then just for good measure, they hit the ropes again, and they did a belly bump together in celebration. Just again, fun fat guy tag team. Otis looked to climb the turnbuckles, but a distraction from Aries at ringside allowed Strong to kick out Otis's knee from behind. And the former generation next began to go to work on the larger Otis. Otis put up an admirable fight, but the smaller team was just able to use their quickness and frequent tags to cut him off at every turn and keep him isolated. They looked for, my god, I did it again. They looked for a double suplex, although I guess a couple suplex makes sense too. But they looked for a double suplex, but Otis reversed the momentum and did a double suplex of his own on them. Tucker Knight then took the hot tag for his team, and the big man came in rolling until he was dropped out of the ring. I think it was Aries who like dropped the middle rope or top rope or something like that and sent him toppling to ringside. Aries then wiped him out with that high-speed impact suicide dive that he does, tossed him into the ring, and tagged in Strong. At this point, the former Generation X was just rolling. Strong ran, hit a high knee strike while Aries knocked Otis off the apron. Strong picked up Tucker Knight onto his shoulders. Aries hit a rolling elbow while Tucker was prone on his shoulders. Strong then dropped him down with a double knee gut check, gut buster, and then he followed up with a running sick kick, single leg drop kick to the face. For the clean win in about 5.5 minutes, Aries and Strong advancing to the second round of the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic, where the bracket showed that it'll be a very fun next round tag team matchup, with Aries and Strong being pitted against the team of TM61. Very much looking forward to that. Hopefully they get some good time. Replays aired. Aries and Strong stood together. I wouldn't say they celebrated in the ring. They just stood together looking dominant in the ring, looking confident, and looking victorious. Commentators then transitioned to a recap of the Revival beating Andrade, Cien Almas, and Cedric Alexander in a Dusty Classic match a couple weeks ago, leading to Andrade Almas turning on Cedric Alexander. We then went backstage where Almas was standing by with a interviewer who was acting as the translator. And via the translator, Almas said that he had sacrificed his mask to come to NXT, and yet he arrived and received no respect. None of the respect that he deserved. He said that he worked his entire life to get to where he is, and he knows he deserved the respect that he is not given. He then stopped the translator from helping him, and he spoke in English himself. He said, "I'm not worried about respect anymore. I only care about Andrade Cien Almas. It's only Andrade Cien Almas." This is the best thing he's done yet. I mean, last week, that backstage promo that they showed was the best thing he had done yet. This week, this is the best thing he's done yet. So, heel Almas is a thumbs up for me so far. So far, anyway. It's only 2 weeks, but so far, so good. Came back into the arena. We had Sanity making their entrance to their dreadful My Name is Mud ripoff song. It was then revealed that it would be Nikki Cross being singles action on this night. And her opponent, Daniel Camella, was already in the ring for the fourth match of the show. This one did not last long at all. Cross aggressively went after Camella. Camella managed to hit a suplex, but in Nikki's gimmick, her whole thing now is that she's psycho. She just no-sold the suplex. I guess she like likes pain because she was just like clawing and gouging out her face and slapping herself really hard. And then she just hit a whiplash fireman's carry neckbreaker, the finish that Tyson Kidd was using before he got put on the shelf. And Nikki Cross goes over in about a minute. Sanity would rejoin Cross in the ring, but then she did what she did when with Ty Dillinger last week or the week before, where she just jumps on him and starts kind of just viciously attacking the person that just got beat. Eric Young pulled Cross off, but she slapped him hard in the face and leapt right back onto Camella and continued putting a beating on her. Sawyer Fulton was finally able to pull her off and kept her restrained, but kept her restrained almost at a point like a dog, where like she was still just like clawing and scratching, trying to get away, and she got down onto all fours, and he would just like hold her by like some loop on the back of her shirt or something like that. And she was just like, you know, on all fours, like clawing and going after Camella still. So her gimmick is that she's like a psycho, and she's a rabid dog. This was the point where they then announced that the referee had decided to reverse the decision and award the win to Daniel Camella via disqualification. Cross could not have cared less. She's just deranged. She was just busy chewing on the ring ropes and stuff like that. But EY was not happy about this. He was screaming and just ranting and raving, yelling at everybody all around the ring, yelling at everybody in the ring. At this point, the chaotic chaos sanity left. And with a wild eye, Eric Young just lecturing Nikki Cross, who again could not have cared less. She was being given a piggyback out of the arena by Sawyer Fulton. This bizarro group. Portrayal's not the word, but like I like the delivery. I like the way they're doing with what they do. I don't know what kind of ceiling it has on it as far as the characters go, as far as the spot on the card goes, but I enjoy the presentation of this act. It's a little bit weird having all three members of Sanity at ringside. It's going to be weirder, particularly when if and when Cross starts becoming a viable player in the women's division and starts having, you know, competitive matches with the other ladies. I guess if they're out there to like restrain her, it's one thing, but it's just like a weird visual. Like, what are three jacked up dudes gonna do in a singles match between two ladies? You know what I mean? Like, how on earth are they gonna get involved? You're not gonna have them get involved. That's just whatever. I don't know. It's a strange visual, but I don't know. I'm enjoying it. I clearly I have my reservations about the group, but I am enjoying the presentation. Week two. And yeah, I somehow I managed to go through all that without talking about Roderick Strong and his debut. Somehow I managed to go that whole match, I guess because they didn't do a commercial break, so I had no time to pause. But it was a fun little match. I thought Strong looked good in his debut. I'm glad that they let him get the win rather than just have him come out and like set up Austin Aries getting the win or something like that. Rather than just being like Aries' lackey or the second player to Aries, they very much came across as equals, as parallels. You know, it was a 5-minute tag team match, so it wasn't Roddy getting the chance to go out there and do what Roddy does best, because what Roddy does best is not accomplished in 5 minutes, nor necessarily in a tag team match for that matter. But it was a good first showing for him, and I'm looking forward to this team putting on some great performances later in the tournament. And as far as Otis and Tucker goes, what a fun team. Like, I'd really like to see this be one of those teams that you know, loses someone on the beginning end of their run and then kind of figures it out and puts it together and starts picking up some wins. I don't want to see these guys a jobber team in 3 months. I want to see these guys a fun babyface team that, because the crowd is really willing to rally behind these guys. I want to see these two as a fun babyface act, middle upper tag team division act, you know, by New Year's time, you know. Really enjoyed what they had to bring, and I think that they can make some real improvements given some screen time and some time to be featured. We then had Shinsuke Nakamura's address, which was hyped up next to close the show. Before that, we had Team DIY, the duo of Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, versus Ho Ho Lun and Tien Ding, as well as Lince Dorada and Mustafa Ali, versus Kota Ibushi and his newly named partner, TJ Perkins, both hyped as the final Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic opening round matches for next week. I think it's the final opening round matches. I could be wrong. Maybe there's one more week to go, but I think that might be it. Anyway, we came back into the arena where the NXT champion Shinsuke Nakamura made his full entrance for the first time in over a month. Let the fans play out, sing, do everything they're going to do before he spoke. He said that he actually spoke very good English. He said, "I am not done with Samoa Joe." He said, "If Joe wants this championship at TakeOver, he can come get it." He said, "Joe can use whatever cheap, dirty tricks he wants. Nakamura, I'm going to beat him with no mercy." Suddenly, Nakamura was interrupted by the music of Patrick Clark, the new Prince spin-off Patrick Clark. Like, I guess that's a new thing in NXT now, is like find a musical act that was popular at some point in the last 30 years and be a complete rip-off of that. You can do Prince, you can do Primus, you can do Linkin Park, you can do I don't know what else they've done, but we'll see. I'm sure there'll be more down the road considering it's the new trend. Anyway, Patrick Clark came out for God knows what reason with the microphone. He said that everybody's tired of seeing Nakamura and Joe. Last time they saw it, Joe almost ended Nakamura's career. Clark then suggested himself, the Velveteen Dream, versus Shinsuke Nakamura. He got in Nakamura's face, but Nakamura hit one kick that clipped out his leg and brought Clark to a knee, and another just very casual kick to the head, but it looked like it put Clark out cold. Just then, Samoa Joe was revealed to be kind of sneaking down the ramp. But once he got to the bottom of the ramp, right as he was around ringside approaching the ring, Nakamura noticed him. And this was the point where Joe stopped, because he was only going to get in the ring if he could attack Nakamura from behind. At this point, while referees were helping Patrick Clark back to his feet, Nakamura charged across the ring and wiped him out with a Kinshasa. Nakamura and Joe had a stare down from ramp in the ring, and that was the way the show closed. So a fine closing segment kind of brings the heat back to this program just a little bit. I guess last week really did that officially. But I mean, after this program was on the back burner, now we're seeing these two being featured together on screen every week, which good. It's about time. Again, I said last week that I didn't think that they could have kept this feud hot and continued it all the way to TakeOver if they had not done some kind of little break like they did with putting Nakamura, quote unquote, on the shelf. But I do think that also took a little bit of the heat away from the program in time. I said that there was a way where they can build it up and incorporate that into the story to make it have more heat than it did before. I don't know that this was necessarily that. I think this was a fine build, but this wasn't like necessarily the fuel to the spark that you know it could have been. But I think they still have time to do that. I think, what was it, 5 weeks that they said until we go to Toronto? So plenty of time to build this up. And yeah, I'm enjoying the new intense Nakamura. If I can't even say if nothing else, because I'm enjoying a lot about this. But if that's the best thing to come out of this, that might be. Happy-go-lucky, jovial Nakamura is great and super entertaining in certain contexts. But when it calls for it, it's nice to show that the guy can really bring it when he needs to. So thumbs up there. And a mild thumbs up to this show. Again, in terms of in-ring, it left something to be desired, but the debuts of Cross, the debut of Roderick Strong, and then this little go-home thing with, not the go-home, but the closing segment with Joe and Nakamura was enough to give the show a mild thumbs up. So, yep, I'm okay with it. I've gone longer than I intended to go, and longer than I pretty much ever go on this show. I don't know how that happened. I'm talkative today. So on that note, I'm going to wrap it up and let you guys get off onto bigger and better things. But with that, I will talk to you all again next week if you sign up for ProWrestling.net membership. Take care.